Hello, it's Joe.
Hello, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Joe.
Who's on the call with me today? Give me some names. Where are you from?
Glenmont, Ohio.
Who's that?
Don, Glenmont, Ohio.
Hey, Don.
Joe, this is Bob Miller, San Diego, California.
Bob from San Diego?
Jerry from Loma Linda, California.
Hey, Jerry.
This is Bob from Florida.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
Tom from North Carolina.
Who was that?
This is Tom from North Carolina.
I think I got the North Carolina part, but I just heard two people talking at once.
Tom
from North Carolina?
Yeah.
And who was the other one?
This is Ashad from Ontario.
Hey, Ashad, how you doing?
Good, very good.
I'm fine. How are you?
Anybody else? Hey, Bob, if you can hear us, we can hear you in the background. Bob Bowman there. And by the way, if you guys, there's noise in the background, you can press *6 and it mutes you out, and you can hit *6 again and it brings you back into the call. I'm going to try to make this as interactive as possible with you and answer as many questions as I can that you've got. I think what I'm going to start with, though, is the email questions that I've got. And if you, next time you're on the call, if you didn't send me an email, feel free to do that and I'll cover those first with you. Let me see if anybody here that sent me an email is on the call. Chris Larson, are you on the call? Chris? Okay, I'm going to read your email and I'm going to answer the question. And if anybody has questions about my answer, you can feel free to speak up. I don't mind being interrupted. We don't have a ton of people on this call, so it's not going to be that big of a problem. All right, he says, first of all, much better picture of you and your family on the PDF newsletter. Okay, I didn't like my nasty looking picture, I guess. How do I keep my investors from trying to discount my $3,000 fee for flipping a house? I had one the other day that tried to intimidate me and tried to get me to lower my fee for my services by saying he could go out and find properties like the one I was offering him all day long. I just looked at him and said, go ahead. However, I wanted to come back with something that sounded more professional and had some class because I don't want to start driving away good investors. Thanks for your updates and emails. Very valuable. I'm working a 5-mile radius from my house in Arlington, Virginia, I assume, making offers on houses and have been able to flip one last week that made me $3,000. Great. Way to go, Chris. Also, you had featured a lady from Arlington. Can you get me in touch with her? I'll try to send you an email on that. Okay. Well, talking to people and trying, I'm not exactly sure how you're doing this flip, if this is just you're buying it subject to and flipping it on a lease option, or if you're flipping it to an investor. If you're working with an investor, which it kind of sounds like you're dealing with here, and you're flipping the property maybe as either a subject to property or you're flipping a undervalued property, and the investor wants to go with someone else, let him. That's no problem. You're not going to be able to work with every one of these investors. And matter of fact, I would focus less on investors than I would on end users. End users are going to be a whole lot more flexible, a lot easier to work with, and they're going to fight you less on the payments that they're going to give you. So don't worry about it if that happens. The other thing is you the way you present something, and you're going to get better at this as you do it, but the way you present something is you can be very matter-of-fact about how much it costs. And if I've got a property, I usually don't even tell them that it's a $3,000 fee. What I ask them is, how much have they got for a down payment? And then they'll tell me, well, I've got, $2,000. I said, well, if you got $5,000, I can make this work. Do you have $5,000? I said, no, I don't. I may be able to come up with $3,000. I said, well, if you could get closer to $3,000, we might be able to make it happen. So, where would you get that money? And then help them find more money, see if they can come up with more down payment, but negotiate your position rather than telling them how much you want for the fee. Negotiate a position on it. And I know I've written different things on this and different methods on this, but I think this is one of the best ways to negotiate and get the amount that you want, especially if you're working with an end user. If you're working with an investor and they can go get properties all day long, they can go get those on their own. Most investors don't know what the heck we're doing, and they're not going to be able to do the same stuff that we're doing. So don't worry about the competition. Don't worry about what they can go do. You've got yours under contract. Find somebody that's going to work for, and then move from there. Okay, the next question is from Donald and Rowena Younglove. Are you, either one of you guys on the call? And if you muted yourself out, you have to press star 6 to get back in. Okay, I'm going to read the email. And if you come on the call, if you're on there, just speak up. Two questions. Can I start my business on the Internet? The reason is I can't drive. I live in a rural area, a few small towns. The bigger towns are an hour and a half away from me. I considered having some retired friends drive me, but they live a half hour from me, so it's hard. Also, it's hard to know when they're available, difficult to schedule appointments with sellers. If I can do it, how much cash would I need? Okay, first of all, if you want to do it all from your home, I can do it all from my home. I can buy properties, I can sell them, I can never have to go out to see the properties. I just don't have to do it. I don't know that you can do it. I don't know that you have the skill to make that happen. And I find that the people that are new in this business have a better chance of making these deals work if they can go out to the property, if they can look at the property, get their head around the value, get their head around who the seller is, and be able to get face to face with them. Now, some of you are going to have skill on the phone, and if you've been if you're homebound, you might be good on the phone. You might have done work on the phone before. And when I talk about work on the phone, I'm usually talking about sales work. If you've got the ability to do sales work on the phone, you're head and shoulders above everybody else that comes into this process. The other great skill that it has that's beneficial when you come into this business is being an entrepreneur. If you've ever had your own business before, that you understand that marketing it has value to it, that the only real profit centers in your business is marketing and innovation. Everything else is an expense. You've got to spend money on your marketing to make your business run. Any entrepreneur will tell you that and will know that. Not all entrepreneurs follow that. They think that they better cut back on their marketing because their expenses are too high. Well, that's insane. Their expenses are too high. They need to increase their marketing, and they need to make their marketing more effective. And that's the same thing that you're dealing with here. So you've got to get enough people calling in. And as you get these sellers calling in and buyers calling in using these techniques that I'm teaching, it's going to be a lot easier for you to practice. And you're going to get good on the phone if you just keep talking to these people and listening to what I teach, and you know how to talk to them, how to structure the deals. Sometimes at the beginning you may have to get off the phone, sit down with the buyer profile sheet or the seller profile sheet that I gave you, fill it out when you've talked to them, get off the phone, sit down with it, figure out how am I going to structure this deal, and go through it piece by piece, figure out what your offer is going to be, and then call them back, make them an offer, and try to sound as credible as you can. And the more you do it, the better you'll get at it. Bob, are you still on the call? Bob Bowman, are you still?
Yeah,
on the call?
Hi, Jeff.
You know, you're one of the. Bob is one of the team leaders in my mentor program, and he's one of the best people on the phone that I know. And he's been doing it all. You've been doing it all your life, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I've been in sales all my life. Yeah.
But when he came into this process, he was just really awesome at it. And last event, and probably at this next boot camp, Bob. By the way, I'll probably get you in front of the class again.
Great.
And actually call sellers in front of the class. So. Tell them, you know, what skills they need to be able to talk to these sellers. I mean, give them some hints on this. You got something?
Oh, well, like you say, a lot of it, I suppose, is after a while second nature. I mean, talking to people. But I think the main thing, and Joe harps on it a lot too, which is so true, you know, you always want to be talking in benefits. You know, the old thing is with them, what's in it for me? That's all they want to hear. So they don't care about how cool you are and you got this and blah, 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 blah. What they really want to know is, what can you do for me? So selling the benefits rather than the features of your program, and particularly the benefits to the seller, you know, are the most important thing. So, you know, and Ozum, in fact, did a great job in our last session. He was talking about how to differentiate yourself. Not only can you provide benefits, but you can provide benefits that nobody else can, because you've got a list of 172 qualified buyers that, you know, you've talked to. They have money. They've talked to a mortgage broker, and you're setting the gold standard in providing quality people to move into their property. you're going to be able to get them market rent or better at a better price without paying at 6% commissions, at 3 or 4% closing, without having to have the caravan marching through your house, all these headaches that traditionally they would associate with listing with Century 21. You eliminate all those. So the net of it is, Mr. Seller, I am the best in the area doing what I'm doing, and what I do is help people like you sell their house quickly for more money with less headaches, and there's your message. And so if you empathize and put yourself in their shoes, it'll come across naturally, I think, just articulating the benefits of dealing with you. And
yeah,
the bottom line is the differentiator, and my mind always was, you know, me, speaking personally, not to get my head all puffed up, but I always thought that I was the differentiator, that there was nobody else out there that was me, obviously, and they were dealing with me, and I really, truly, sincerely cared about helping them out. And so what I was on the phone to do was to figure out what their needs were and how I could help, and once I understood what they wanted, I'd figure out a way to get it, by golly, because I was on their side and I was going to do it.
That,
so if you really sincerely believe that, it'll come across, and they'll pick up on that.
That's deeply profound, by the way. I mean, that concept of taking your focus, taking it off yourself, and putting it on them, knowing, first of all, that it's what's in it for them is all they care about, then knowing you're there to solve their problem. If you can solve their problem, you're going to make money. If you can't solve their problem, they don't need to be working with you. And there's so many ways that we can solve their problem, and there's so many things that we can do to make that happen. So we're not there to take advantage of people. We're not there to rip them off. We're not there to do any of those things. We're there to help them. So we approach it. We take that whole attitude of we're there as a counselor to solve the problem. If we can't do it, probably nobody can. But if you look at most of these sellers, most of the sellers we're dealing with, they've got a couple of choices. One is they can go into foreclosure, or they can sell it to you. And if they sell it to you, there's always a possibility that you're going to screw it up and you're going to put them into foreclosure as well. But they have the choice of absolutely going into foreclosure or maybe going into foreclosure. Well, they're going to go for the maybe, and it's always going to make more sense to do it that way. So if you can, and as you get more confident in yourself and your abilities, you're going to be able to speak more fluently and more comfortably to these people, more confidently to these people, and they're going to believe you if you believe it yourself. One of my students I was talking to the other day, she has such problems with thinking that she's doing something good for somebody. She thinks she's doing it for herself. And I'm trying to get her mind off of the idea that she's doing it for herself and onto the idea that she's doing it for somebody else. Are there risks for that person? Yes, there are risks. Are those risks that she's proposing for them to take greater than the risk that they're in now by having a property they can't sell? Absolutely. So she can solve those problems for them, make their risks drop dramatically, solve their problems, and there's always the potential that they're going to continue to have problems in the future at some point. But it's going to be better than the situation they would have been in. All right. The second part of that. Yes, you can do it from home. It's going to be easier to get started doing it if you can go to the property. So the quicker you can get to the point where you're able to talk to people and communicate with them and make offers, the faster it is you're going to be able to do it from home and not have to go out. And then you're going to be at home so much you're going to want to go out. And because you're going to get cabin fever. She also asked, how much startup cash do you need? You don't really need startup cash for this. You need a cell phone or a telephone, and you need a newspaper, you know, full of for rent ads and for sale by owners and my techniques. Probably the biggest expense you're going to have is learning how to do this stuff. You can learn a couple of ways. One, you can learn by listening to somebody teach you how to do it. Either me or somebody else, doesn't matter, as long as they have a good solid system for doing it. And or you can do it yourself and learn by School of Hard Knocks. I think the School of Hard Knocks is more expensive than paying somebody to teach you. All right, the next part of her question was, she had a news article here, debt load makes Americans vulnerable. Credit card crunch, mortgage mania, international money market deficits. And she asks, won't all these things prove beneficial to real estate investors? The answer is absolutely. When the market declines, the possibilities of doing these types of deals goes up dramatically. And there's a lot more people that are in distress, and there's a lot more people that need your help, and thusly you can make a lot more money. So in down markets, you can do very well. Now, in up markets, you can make money too, but you have to modify your methods slightly to make it work within those markets. You can make money in any real estate market. There's no place that you can go in the country where there's not somebody making money in real estate. You may read headlines about, in this state the market values have dropped this much and everybody's going into foreclosure and there's all these problems. And you know, you take a place like Flint, Michigan, you know, where the steel mine, you know, the steel industry is just taking a hit, and nobody's, all these foreclosures, all these empty houses. Well, somebody could go in there and make a fortune if they knew these techniques, if they used the techniques that I'm teaching. And then they take a place like Phoenix, where the market is booming and it's hard to buy a property because you're competing with so many other people. Well, there are ways to make money in those markets too if you use the right techniques. So learn the right techniques for the market that you want to work in, and or change markets. If you like a particular way of doing things better, change the market that you're in. We can do, if you're doing them from home, if you're learning how to do this stuff from home like I'm teaching, I can be in Indiana and I can buy properties in California. I can be here in Indiana and buy them in Florida or Alabama or New York. Doesn't matter. All right. Next question here is from Alan Yonker. About a week ago, I bought some of your materials. I've been studying as much as possible. My engineering mind was having a hard time getting things to make sense. Alan, are you on the call? Are you on the call?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, good, good. I printed out this.
Yeah.
I printed out your. He created a flow chart to summarize the process for what I'm teaching as far as which structures to do and how to do this, and it's pretty cool. I think you've kind of nailed it. I think you understand this thing. Did you make a more elaborate one since you sent this one over?
Well, I can't hear you very well, Joe.
You can't hear me?
Barely.
Okay. Let me try to speak up just a little bit. Does that help a little bit?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. I got your cash flow. I got your flow chart. I got your flow chart that you created on how to create these deals, and it's pretty solid. It's right on track. It looks like you're understanding what I'm talking about. Did you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you create one that's more elaborate than this? You said in your email that you're doing one that's even more elaborate than this one.
I've expanded on a little bit to get down to what sort of paperwork is required at the bottom of each track there. And I also made a flowchart for the qualifying buyers.
Right. This thing could get very, I think it could get very involved because there's a lot of things and a lot of branching off that you could do on it. But I think this is a good basic way to look at the structure of the stuff. And I don't know if you're interested in doing it or not, but I'd be happy to give this to the people that are on this call, put it up on the site when I do the recording of this, if you'll allow me to do that.
Yeah, I can send you a more recent version.
Okay. I'll make this flowchart available to the people that are listening to this call, the people in the cash flow, because I think it does lay out the process a little bit to help make it a little clearer.
Yeah, I'll send you updated versions of this one and the buyer.
What's that? Say it again, Alan. Speak up a little bit louder.
I can send you updated versions of this one and the one I did for buyers, qualifying buyers.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. I think that it's a good way, especially for a structured mind. If you're an engineer like this, it helps you kind of look at the flow process with this thing and makes it a little easier to understand. So,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely good. Did you have another question for me, Alan?
No, as long as you're satisfied that I've got the concept down, that's fine.
Yeah, I think you're right on track with this process. There's always places to elaborate and expand and change it, but if you understand it on this level, you should be able to write offers and be able to make offers to people based on just this information.
Okay.
All right, that's the last email that I've got, so I'm going to open the call up for anybody who's got questions. Just speak up and I'll answer your question.
Hey, Joe.
Yes.
Joe, this is Bob out in San Diego, California.
Hey, Bob.
Joe, I'm you know, out here in San Diego, it's probably like Phoenix. But there's not a real lot of properties that, you know, like when something does come on the market, people snatch it up. I mean, you know, so things aren't sitting for any length of time. And, you know, the average cost for like a, you know, a fixer-upper is about $500,000 out here. How could you use a lease option in this environment when the rent for something like that would probably cost somebody about $5,000 or something a month? It's hard for me to understand how that can work out here in the San Diego area.
Well, I used to do it all the time in Los Angeles, up in the Hollywood Hills with those lease options. And I didn't have a problem at all because the way that I did it was I tied the payment, instead of calling it rent, we called it, this is what the payment would be when you buy the property. So it changes the whole dynamic of it. Because now, and if they say, well, that's way over what rent would be, I say, well, this isn't rent, this is a payment.
Right.
That if you bought this property, this is what it's going to cost. If you want to rent something, go rent a property. But this is a property that you're buying. And if here's the property, here's the mortgage that you have. If you can't afford this one, what can you afford? Maybe I can help you find another property that you can afford. And then take them that direction.
Yeah.
But if they, most of the time I never had a problem with them paying that payment because they tied it so closely to the what the payment's going to be on the mortgage itself.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure it is just tougher in an area where houses are snatched up as soon as they come on the marketplace.
There's always going to be more problems when you're in an up market with this particular technique.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that you just need to look at a different type of technique, and you have to look at different ways to find your buyers.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're looking at buyers. If you're controlling the buyers, it's going to be a lot easier to get the sellers.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got to find where the sellers are going to, that you can get them before they put it on the market.
Mm-hmm.
So that means advertising. That means marketing. Are they going? Are these probates? Are they going through an attorney? Can you get them through an attorney using that technique?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they for sale by owner? I mean, it still makes sense to go for sale by owner and try those methods. Are they expired listings? Expired listings are very powerful.
Okay.
Because these people had their house on the market for a while and it didn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it didn't sell in a hot market because they're overpriced.
Right.
But if they create terms on it and are overpriced, the likelihood that they're going to sell is much, much higher.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can get more money for a property that's over, you know, for a property that you sell when you sell it on terms. So if you pick, let's say somebody's got their property listed for $500,000, and the real market value of it is $450,000, and they just can't get the thing sold on the MLS because nobody's willing to pay that right now. Well, you could get $500,000 for it. I mean, you're not going to have a problem doing that if you do a lease option, and if you've got a list of buyers in place, it's going to be a lot easier. So you want to start developing that list of buyers. It also makes you incredibly credible when you go talk to a seller. When you call up a seller and you say, I've got, you know, like Bob said, I got 173 people on my list that want to buy a property in your area, but I'm out of properties. I don't have any more properties to sell to them, so I'm kind of in a pinch, you know.
Would be the first thing to get the list of buyers or try to find properties first?
I think you need to do both at the same time.
Uh-huh.
I think that's kind of a cop-out to go for just the buyers first. It makes it easier to find sellers if you've got buyers. But you need to learn the process of talking to the sellers, too.
Right.
So when you finally get your buyers in place, you'll be better at talking to your sellers.
Right.
And the only thing you have to do to learn how to talk to sellers is get on the phone.
Right.
And start making offers like I'm teaching.
I'm doing the same thing in another part of the country, but partnering with my sister. She's a real estate agent. She loves this concept that, you know, that you're teaching. And we just ran into one, in fact, last week, just a person that, because she's also a home nurse, and this is where she's finding her real estate listings and stuff like that. So she met this lady who, she'd be willing to give up her home. She's paying like $9.95 a month, including taxes and everything like that. All we need to do now is find a buyer. So, you know, I said, what we need to do is just run an ad, just like you say, run an ad someplace in the local paper and rent to own. But I think it's already going to work. We have a house, but we don't have the buyer yet, you know, and we don't want to get it until we have a buyer. Obviously, we don't want to pay rent on it, you know.
Have you put a purchase agreement on it?
We haven't. This just happened, just like within a couple of days. We want to try to find a buyer first, or shouldn't we buy?
No,
it
no.
There?
You don't want to close it. If you want to do it the safe way, you don't want to close it till you find a buyer. But you can still put a purchase agreement that gives you 90 days to close.
Okay.
With the weasel clauses. Do you have the stupid proof set?
Yes.
Okay, use the contracts in the stupid proof set that are laid out for a subject to deal.
Okay.
Or at least a rent-to-buy deal. However you're going to do it. Are you doing a subject to on her?
In this case, yeah.
Okay, so you take the property, you write a purchase agreement up that's subject to the existing loan,
mm-hmm.
And you have 90 days to close, and you've got your weasel clause contingencies in there, and then you go out and you put a sign in the yard, rent to buy.
Right.
That sign in the yard is going to sell 60% of your properties.
Okay.
It's a lot more powerful and a lot cheaper than advertising classifieds.
Okay.
And I would say spend the first 30 days only sign, no classifieds.
Okay.
Unless you're running classifieds anyway, just to build your buyer list,
okay.
Which might not be a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so get these buyers going through it and looking at the property and seeing if you can move it that way. Have her show the property. She's out there. It's going to bring her buyers, too.
Okay.
This is a beautiful thing for a real estate agent. I'm having a hard time getting real estate agents to understand what I'm teaching,
mm-hmm.
because it could make them so much money if they do what I'm teaching.
Yeah, you can see this.
Yeah. Instead, what's happening is I'm taking my students and saying, why don't you go partner with real estate agents that have them give you a cut off of the stuff, which you can do as well if you're not an agent.
Yeah.
But she's going to get the when people call on a rent to buy sign. Let's say you get 10 calls a week, which is really conservative in most places. A lot of times you'll get 40 calls over a weekend. But let's say you got 10 calls a week. One of those people, one out of that 10, on the average, is going to be able to qualify for a mortgage even though they don't think they can.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that if they qualify for a mortgage and she takes them through the qualification process, hey, you know, you qualify for any mortgage, why don't I find you a house to live in? You know, you can pick out of the MLS. You don't have to pick just one house.
Right.
And then she can go make herself a commission.
Right.
And, you know, maybe if you're involved in the advertising stuff, maybe you can figure out a way to you get a cut. So she goes out and does that and makes money on the buyer that way. The other 9, they don't qualify right now, but they need a house to live in.
Right.
So you have to educate them and teach them how to do this process. Now, one of the things I teach in the push-button method is I have a series of emails that go out. You do have an autoresponder. I show you how to set all that stuff up. And you send out these emails to them that teaches them what they need to do to find their own property. And you send them out on the quest to find their own house. And then you put the deal together on it. And you get a cut on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other people, whenever you get a new property, then you send out an email to them immediately. So you're building this relationship with them, and they're more likely to continue to use you because you're building a relationship with them. This is kind of advanced stuff. Yeah, I mean, you want to just get your first deal done, but you start thinking about these things, too, as you start building your list, because there's so much you can do when you have a powerful list. And when you go to a seller and say, I got 32 people on my list that are interested in this area. Jim, one of my other team leaders, was telling a story just the other day. He was... He called a guy, told him, like, I've got, you know, 73 or whatever. He's got, like, hundreds of people on his list right now. But he says, I got all these people on my list, and I have somebody who might be interested in your property. And he actually did, because he knew somebody that would work for that property. So on the way over to put the deal together, he called the guy, told him, I think I got this property. Why don't you come over in about 20 minutes? And then he gets in front of the guy and says, well, I need to show this. The seller says, I need to show this to my attorney. He says, well, you know, I've got a guy coming over that I think would like to buy the property. If he wants to buy it, you know, would you be interested in selling it? And he ended up selling it right then and there. And the guy was very impressed with the process. And it builds your credibility. That credibility that you build is going to make it possible for you to do a lot more deals. And it's also going to build your confidence and make it easier for you to ask for that kind of stuff. Does that answer your question, or did I go off on
a tangent? Yeah, no, that does. That's, I was just wasn't sure, you know, like, first of all, you know, about the market here in San Diego, and then I didn't know whether we should do a purchase agreement with that house that's available for us right now, but I'll go ahead and do that.
Yeah, that should be done today, and the sign should be in the yard this afternoon.
Okay.
So, and you know the kind of sign to use, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Rent to buy, no qualifying, phone number, and the phone number goes to a voicemail. And my script is in that stupid proof set, but if you don't have my stupid proof set, I know some of you guys don't, that's it's essentially write a script that tells them that, you know, what lease rent to buy is and how you have to have at least $2,000. The script that I've got says, well, I have three lists of buyers. One for people that have $2,000 down, one that has $5,000, and one that has $10,000. I don't really have three lists. What I'm trying to do is get them to tell me how much they've got for a down payment up front so I can go in and negotiate as much as I can for them and know that they're qualified going in. So
right.
use that voicemail script. You need to set up a separate voicemail for that specifically. You don't want your sellers calling that. You want just the buyers calling that.
Okay.
And also get putting these signs up around. Those things, those are amazing. Those signs, you can put them all over the place and you'll get a lot of people. Those things draw better than just about anything we've ever done. And you can get a lot of buyers.
Cool. Okay, thanks. I appreciate that.
You bet. Who else has a question?
Hey, Joe.
Yes.
This is Tom over in North Carolina.
Hey, Tom.
Say, a scenario of, well, I've done this several times here lately, there's several calls I made, where I call a person that's fixing to go into foreclosure, and they tell me, well, you've got to make the down payment, you know, or the back payments up, but they don't want to wait until you sell the house to do that. What do you do there when you don't want to put out $3,000 or $4,000?
Well, it depends on the situation. It depends on how much equity is in the property. Let's take this one. You have one specific that you're talking about?
No, not right offhand. Well, I had one last week. It was about, I think, $40,000 equity in it, but they were $7,000 behind.
Oh, that's a beauty. That's a beauty. Okay, here's how you do this one. $40,000 behind, $40,000 equity, that's just something you could almost, what's the full price of the property?
They're asking $149,000, which is what they owe. They had an appraisal on it about 6 months ago at $187,000, but I'm sure it's went up at least 3% by then, since then.
Okay. Have you seen the comps?
I saw what they had, yes. I saw their appraisal on it.
So they look legitimate?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a CMA.
Man, let's say that you're $7,000 behind. So there's different types of buyers that you can go after here. I think what I would do is turn around and I personally would right now give them $7,000 out of my pocket and take the property. That probably makes sense. That means you have to come up with $7,000 plus you have to come up with a monthly payment until you find a tenant for it. Or until you sell.
Right. Which I don't have.
Okay, so that takes us to the next step, which is you get it subject to the existing loan. You're going to bring it current as soon as you find a buyer for it. And your buyer has to come up with the $7,000.
Right.
Now,
that's what I attempted to do, but they wouldn't let me do a subject to unless I could show them the money up front.
Well, you're not going to close it. You're just going to give them a purchase agreement.
Right. That's what I'm saying. They wouldn't do a purchase agreement unless they knew I was going to make. They want me to make payments then. And, you know, I tried to explain to them, and as soon as I can find a tenant buyer, you'll get your money. You don't have to worry about it.
Well, what are their options right now?
Well, that's what I tried to explain to them. You're going to lose it anyway, right? And they said, well, probably. I said, well, this way you got a lot better chance. You know, 50-50 is the way I look at it.
It's a lot better than that. It's a lot better than that.
They still weren't interested.
Okay.
In doing that.
Well, next time you explain this to them, instead of telling them what their situation is, ask them what their situation is. And that's by using these motivation questions like, well, what happens if you don't find a buyer for it?
Right.
Can you pull this out of that, money out of the hat somewhere? Is your parents going to help you? What's going to pull you out of this thing? Because.
Yeah, I think that's the one question I missed is, what are you going to do if I don't buy?
Right. Well, there's some places where you can go with this. Where I say, look, let me, what if you, do you have a sign in the yard? Do they have a sign in the yard right now?
No.
What if they let you put a sign in the yard? Let you see if you can find a buyer for it. And put a deal together that way. Just tell, hey, look, we'll do this as a handshake. I'll trust you. And they may screw you.
In other words, I put a sign there with my number on it, and if whichever happens first, that's the way we go, right?
Right. Or you can put in make the purchase agreement. Say, look, what if I gave you a purchase agreement that you could get out of without even telling me? All you have to do is give me a phone. All you have to do is give me a phone call and tell me you're out. I'm going to sell it to somebody else. Would they accept something like that?
I'll try it.
Because then it puts you at risk that they could go around you, that they could take your buyer. You know, there's all sorts of things that could go wrong. But the likelihood is if you set it up properly with them by saying, look, you know, I know you guys are good people in a tough situation, and I know that I can probably trust you in this situation by I'll find a buyer, I'll write the contract any way you want to, you know, so that if I don't come up with somebody, you can go do whatever you want with it. But give me the opportunity to have the contract so we have an agreement on what we will do if I can bring in a buyer and what you will do. And if you'll say, look, I'll take the, you know, I'll take the subject to deal where I make the payments on your loan and I, you know, bring it current and we don't close it until it's current. If you agree to that, then you're willing to, and I'm willing to let you walk away from that anytime you want before we close, would something like that work? And they might go for something like that. Make it really easy for them, because if they back out of a deal, even if they've got a signed contract, it's going to be hard to get that thing closed. So you've got to, the things that you've got to get good at are being able to get people to understand that if, you know, I know that you wouldn't stab me in the back. I've been stabbed in the back before by doing this. I know that. And I know it's possible you could stab me in the back, but I don't think you will. Just by talking to you and I get a feel for you guys, you seem like good people. You don't seem like somebody who would rip somebody off or stab them in the back or steal from them. You know, you wouldn't do that to me. So, and use those words, because they know then if they do that, that that's exactly how you feel about them.
Right.
And that's how they'll have to feel about themselves. So it's less likely that they'll do those things. So use those words when you're describing that stuff, and when you're describing how. And we do this with the lease option memo too. If you guys have done the for rent method, it's also they can get out of it with any, you know, for any reason, for any reason whatsoever. But rarely do we have people screw us on that. Does that answer the question?
I think so.
I kind of went in a different direction on that because you can get the money if they're late on their payments. You can get the money from the down payment of people that are coming in. The higher the down payment, like $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 like that, that's harder to get as a lease option fee. So if there's no equity in the property and they owe $7,000 on top of that, that might be a deal you want to pass on.
Right.
On the other hand, if it's got $40,000 worth of equity in it and only $7,000 behind, that's a good deal, because you can turn around and sell this thing for $195,000, $200,000 on a lease option. If you can, you know, all you need is to get $7,000 up front. You won't make any money up front at all, because the $7,000, you know, if all you get is $7,000, but you'll have, you know, $30,000-$40,000 on the back end that you'll get in a year, plus you'll get
right.
some monthly cash flow.
Yeah.
So it'd make a lot of sense.
Just me.
Okay. So don't give up on those deals. And the other option that you can give them is could they bring it current? A lot of times they could bring it current. And if they can bring it current, then you could find them a lease option buyer and do the for rent thing with them.
Right.
And you take the lease option fee. They get the lease option buyer at their full price. You know, that could make a lot of sense to them as well.
Yep.
But they'd have to come. They'd have to make it current. So, and some of these people, they can make it current. They haven't been making any payments for a while. They might be saving that money, or their parents might come in. I had one just the other day that the parents had some $30,000 they were giving for a down payment on a new house, and they were going to have to pay $20,000-$25,000 of that down payment to get rid of their old house. And the only way they could sell that old house is by paying that money, and they did it. And they got it from their parents. And they didn't tell their parents that they only had $5,000 left.
Okay. That does refresh my mind with a few more questions I need to ask them.
Go ahead.
I say that does refresh my mind there.
Okay.
A few more questions I need to ask them.
Yeah, absolutely. You should be able to put some of those deals together. Go back and look at all the deals you've talked to and see, and call them back again and make them a fresh offer.
I'll do that.
All right. Let me know how it goes, Tom.
I will.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. Who else has questions?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Friday calling from Tifton, Georgia.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. My question is this. You know, I just recently purchased your real estate program, and I was kind of wondering, you know, like... Guys, I was going through the contract forms, but I couldn't find the one for if somebody is selling a house for sale by owner. I didn't find a form for that one. For
it's
sale
not,
by owner.
Yeah, the contract.
I'm talking about the form for the. For writing the proposal, I didn't find no form for that.
Okay. It doesn't matter who they are. The form you use doesn't matter on whether they're for sale by owner or an expired or a landlord. Doesn't matter. What matters is how they're selling it. Are they selling it subject to? Are they selling it multi-mortgage? Are they selling it land contract or lease option or cash? Those are the five different contracts that I have in that program. So those are the things that that you need. And any type of seller can sell it to you any of those methods. So all those methods are there. Now, do you have a specific type of, do you have a specific deal you're talking about?
Oh, no. I've been seeing some deal around that I'm trying to approach, but I was kind of a little afraid that, hey, you know, before I go approach it, I don't have the right, contract form, you know, with me.
Do you understand the different ways you structure deals? The ways I just talked about.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
Okay, I would go back. Do you have the? What do you have? A stupid proof set. What do you have?
No.
My book.
Oh yeah, I have the one I've purchased through the online. I don't have the book. I have the e-book.
Oh, you have my book. Okay.
Oh, the e-book, yeah.
Okay. Well, that book tells you about the different structures. Tells you about different structures.
It's okay.
Stupid Proof expands on that. There's more stuff in the Stupid Proof than is in the book. But if you understand the basics, which is subject to and lease options, if you understand those two basics and maybe land contracts, you're going to be fine. Multi-mortgage is another advancement in this, which also helps. But if you understand the structures, that's going to make it easier for you to make an offer. So what I suggest you do when you're getting started like this, because everybody's nervous when they begin like this. You know, you don't know what to say. You're going to feel like an idiot. You're going to sound like an idiot. And there's just no way to get around that. So what you the best way to approach this process is to take that buyer or that seller profile form that I've got. The seller questionnaire, you know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, no.
It's in the back of the book there. So get that seller profile and ask them those questions. Get them on the phone, ask them those questions, and then sit down with the information they gave you and see if you can figure out the best type of offer to make them, an offer that you think will work for them.
Okay.
So, and I mean, that's a good way to get going. Now, if you've got, if the only information you've got is using the book, I would start with classified ads, using the We Buy Houses type ads that I teach you about in the books, because that's kind of a specific method of doing it. It'll get you started and get you moving in the right direction. There's a lot of other things that you can do in my other systems that show you how to find these buyers and how to approach them and how to use the internet and how to use voice blasts and all that other stuff. But the book, I mean, is based around classified ads and signs, which both are still very effective ways of doing this stuff. So if you'll use those classified ads, you'll get people to call you, and you can start putting together deals, asking them questions, putting together deals. That's going to be easier for you with this method and with these techniques than using for sale by owners. Now, once you understand these techniques, it'll be easier for you to approach for sale by owners, and you can make that happen as well. So there's different layers here, different levels that you're gonna go through as you get better at this process and as you learn more about it. Does that answer the question, or did I go way off?
Yes. Yeah, I have another one more question.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the question is this, you know, myself, I'm just a beginner with, you know, low cash in this business. Okay, the manual I talk about, you know, like working with some professional, like real estate appraiser and attorney. Since I don't have the kind of money to pay those professional, you know, like my first or second deal now, would that one stop me from, you know, going forward and do whatever I want to do?
The only reason it's going to stop you by not being able to afford an attorney is if you have too much fear over the process. If you're afraid of hey, I've got this, I have to have this perfect, and I want an attorney to look at it first, I recommend you come up with the money and you go get an attorney and you talk to him about it. If you don't have the fear, and we're doing this stuff all the time, so I know that it's working, I know that it's legal, and I know you can move forward with it. So you've got to have that confidence in yourself, though, and if you don't have it, I'm not an attorney. I don't even play one on TV. So you got to get comfortable with it, and if you're not, then get somebody to help you. You don't need to be paying out money to title companies or real estate agents or mortgage brokers. None of that money. You don't need any of that money. The only thing money that you're going to need to spend is if you put money into classified ads, into other forms of advertising, into signs. You know, if you start doing voicemail blasts or email blasts, you might put a little bit of money into some of that stuff. But that's profit center. That's advertising. And always keep in mind that the only profit center in a business is your advertising. So spend money on advertising if you're going to spend it anywhere.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Who else has a question? If you've muted yourself out, you have to press *6 to get back in. Anybody else have any questions? If you guys need me to go into some of the techniques that I use, you know, if you have a specific question about, you know, how can I make a specific type of deal work, or how can I make it work in my town, or how can I, you know, what do I do first, what do I do second, any of those questions I'll be happy to answer.
Joe, this is Stephanie Rebert from Northern California.
Hey, Stephanie, how are you?
Good, thank you. I'm just started to get into this real estate process, and I'm actually a realtor but not a practicing one. And so I'm kind of trying to figure out where to start. Like, I don't know if I should start with a duplex or with a single family residence or just what to look for. Can you kind of elaborate on that process?
It doesn't matter whether you start with multifamily or single family. I think single family is a little bit easier for most people to get started with. I think a lot of people say, well, let's do multifamily because there's lots of benefits to multifamily. But that's if you're going to keep the properties and hold them long term.
Okay.
So you've got to decide what it is that you want to accomplish. I mean, what is it that you want first? Do you want immediate cash flow, or do you have enough cash flow and you want long-term growth?
Right.
Let's analyze it now. What do you want?
Long-term growth.
Okay, so you've got cash flow. You don't need monthly income. You've got some other source of income?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have money to invest, or do you want it to do it zero down?
Most of my money is technically tied up right now, so I would like to do it with zero down.
Okay. And by the way, as soon as you learn how to do zero down stuff, you'll never want to spend money.
Well, yeah, that's what one of my friends was like. You don't ever want to put money down.
Right, right. So,
but I just kind of have more of where do I start? You know, it's very expensive where I live, and everything is going up and up and up, and it's kind of like, I'm like, is it going to drop? Is it not going to drop? Should I just look at another area? I kind of get myself in a bottleneck, and so I'm just kind of looking for some direction of where to start.
Well, where in California are you?
I'm actually in Northern California in Discovery Bay.
Okay. So you know that you're sitting on a bubble, right? You know that it's eventually going to pop and the values are going to drop.
Right.
And so when you buy and hold for long term, there's the potential that you could really take a big hit.
Right.
So if you're going to keep properties long term, you want to make sure that they cash flow now. That you get monthly cash flow from them right now in the position they're in. Because even if the values drop and you've got tenants in there, your cash flow is probably going to stay fine.
Right.
Your rents probably aren't going to drop dramatically. And then the market will come.
I wouldn't suspect that due to the fact that everyone else probably bought at a high time.
Right. Plus the market is going to
correct itself.
It's going to correct itself, and it's going to drop, and then it's going to eventually come back up again. And, then it'll go even higher than it was before. So if you can get good cash flow properties, that might make a lot of sense for you. So then the question is, well, do you want to get multifamily, or does it make sense to buy single-family homes? If all you're looking for is long-term growth, single-family homes can be very attractive because they do go up a lot faster. If you're going to stay in that Northern California area, multi-unit buildings, they go up based on the rent, not based on the rest of the market.
Right.
They're not going up the same way as that they have comps. Now, their cap rate will drop, which means the value goes up as the whole market goes up in relation with the rest of the world. But you're not going to see the same kind of dramatic appreciation that you'll see on single-family homes. So you could buy these single-family homes, lease option them for a year, turn around, sell them, buy another one. If you're in a really hot market like that, it might make sense. I don't know. Did you get to hear the conversation that I did with Dick Moore about the pre-construction stuff?
Yeah, I actually listened to that. I had the CD and I was listening to it last night, and I understood that. What was interesting is I went to a couple of the new builders out here, and they had a lot of the tough languages that, you know, you can't buy this property, you have to sell your first property. And I actually got my brother, because he didn't have a property, so I brought my brother in to kind of come in and saying, hey, do you want to make some money? I just need you to help me with this property, this new development. So that's actually what I started to do, because my brother doesn't have a residence technically.
Right. And can he qualify?
That's kind of a way that I worked around that option.
Right. See that, and how many people do you think you could find that would be willing to do that?
Probably, I actually kind of felt out a couple of my brother's friends, because most of them all rent, and I told them that was a problem and that they all should be actually having a house or own a house and flip it and make some money off of it, even if we went 50-50, utilizing them as their credit and them as not currently owning a house.
Right. Now,
that was kind of the strategy that I was thinking about, and my brother actually bought in on it, so we were actually waiting for this new development opening up where I live. With the new models coming out, we were trying to get in one of those houses, and then I was trying to find at least two more people to do that as well.
Here's my advice for the future. Okay. This is great with your brother and what you're doing. That makes a lot of sense. But in the future, you can get people to sign on these loans and give them a couple of $1,000.
Okay.
You don't give them 50% of the deal.
Okay.
You know, $2,000 is probably fine to do on these kinds of houses. You're talking about $300,000-$400,000?
Yeah, there's about
500
starting.
500, okay. I mean, are they going to be able to qualify, or are you going to have to co-sign?
I'm going to have to co-sign them.
Okay.
Because they actually, their income isn't as much as what mine is.
Right.
So I will have to co-sign, which is the reason why I went in there with them, explaining to that salesperson who was trying to sell the property.
As long as you have a tenant, though, you'll be able to right off, you'll be able to take 75% of any tenant income to pay for that to pay for that. So if you're co-signing it, it's not going to be your expense. So it shouldn't have a big impact on your debt ratios.
Yeah, that's what I was. That's what I actually was asking my tax person the other day. They hadn't gotten back to me, but yeah, that's a good point. Because
yeah.
I didn't know if that was going to affect me or not on my credit.
Right. Eventually, you won't be able to sign it anymore, though.
Yeah, no, and I know that I have to change almost the strategy and just actually get some, either switch it to kind of changing it to the model that you were talking about earlier, where you have a property and it's quick cash turnaround,
right,
versus the long term. Just because I think I'll extend myself too far, and I don't necessarily want to put myself in that position.
If you have a ton of money to invest, let's say you've got $300,000 or $500,000 to invest, and you want to put it into a good secure investment. What I would do if I was a beginner, I would first suggest that you get into like a small multi-unit building, maybe a 4 or 5 unit building. I saw a building just down in Marina del Rey, it's not going to cash flow, but if you had a lot of down payment, it would cash flow. And you know it's going to be a good property, you're going to have good tenants, it's going to be easy to manage, and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. So you can look for properties like that, and you're going to want to get on the internet and look at a website called LoopNet, L-O-O-P.
Yeah, I actually am registered with them.
Okay, good. And start, do a search by cap rate.
Cap rate, okay.
And just figure out 10% cap rate is probably going to be about a break even on 100% finance.
Okay.
And then go do a search on everything that's 11% to, say, 20% cap rate. Now, a lot of those people that are listing those properties don't know what a cap rate is, so they're going to be wrong. But a cap rate, and I'm really getting off the subject of what I usually teach here, but since you're asking, this is kind of, we're taking you a different direction here. Do you know what a cap rate is? Do I need to explain that?
I'm vague on it.
Okay.
Different people calculate it differently, so
well,
you tell me what your
there's only one
cap rate is.
There's only one real calculation for it. And what that is you have the gross rents minus the expenses, but not the debt service, not the mortgages. So any expenses, including management, you want to put management in there as well if it's not already in there. So
okay.
Between 6 and 10%. I'd put in 10 just to be safe. And then put in any other expenses, trash pickup or, common lighting, repairs, maintenance, vacancies. You put in a percentage, maybe 10% for vacancies. And you subtract that from the gross rents and projected rents. And then you come up with a net income there. That net income you divide into the purchase price of the property. So let's say the annual income for that, net income for that property is $100,000, and the property is $1 million property. That makes it a 10% cap rate.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Now, the important part here is, will that 10%, will that $100,000 cover the mortgage on $1 million property? And so you have this income. This is your net income. It's got to go towards your mortgage if it's $1 million. And let's say you've got a $7,500 a month cost, you're just about break even at a 10% cap rate.
Okay.
Is that you're still with me?
Yeah, no, I got it.
Okay, so 11% is better because now it's 11% of the purchase price. 12% is better. 13%.
Right.
I mean, you're probably going to find, there's plenty of 11 and 12 percenters out there. But in California, you're going to find 8 and 9%.
Yeah, I mean, I've been seeing 6, 4, 8, and I've kind of not what I wanted to.
Right. So
yeah.
So that means you've got either got negative cash flow or you've got big down payments you got to make.
Right.
Either way, to get you. Now those properties, they might be in a position where it makes a lot of sense to put a big down payment on it if that's what you want to do, but you don't really want to do that. So then you want to start looking at the properties and how you're gonna find. Now, let's say that instead of buying in California, you decide you're going to go with an 11% cap rate in Tennessee, and it's a 100-unit building for $3 million. Let's say you've got $300,000. If it's 10%, it'd be $300,000. I don't, off the top of my head, I can't tell you 11 or 12, but
right.
You'd be able to break even on 100% financing, plus be able to make an extra $10,000 a month on cash flow. Plus, you'd own this incredible property, and there's some other things that you can do to bring in more money by bringing in an investor and selling off your depreciation rights and cool things like that, which I won't get into. But,
okay.
But which could actually get you your, if you put a down payment on, you could actually get your down payment back that way if you've got people that you know that have money to invest and want to secure by real estate and want to, you know, 11-12% interest, you know, they know they're going to get 11-12% just because of the tax savings that they make because of the depreciation on the property.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if I'm going over your head here.
No, I'm with you on that.
Okay. So then the next step comes is where am I going to find this multifamily seller that's motivated? And you use exactly the same techniques that I teach on finding single-family homes, except
okay.
You're targeting a different market.
Right.
And you can go into the tax rolls, and you can find the people that are multifamily, and you can do mailings to them. You can do calls to them. You know, you can find these people. It's not hard.
Yeah, LoopNet's been a great resource for me because I found some brand new construction duplexes and fourplexes in Texas, and I actually have a colleague that was out there that was actually out there looking at the properties for me to see what they look like before I go out there.
Great. There's some interesting things going on there. Just make sure you look up on the internet, find out your particular town that you're looking at, and what the market's like. Is it going up? Is it stagnating? Are there more properties coming on the market than are selling? And
right.
some of that you can get from realtors. Others you can get online.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. sounds like you're going to have some fun there. But I, you've got some stuff to work with. And I like the new construction stuff. That's the potential there. But you've also got big risks. And be aware of the risk that you've got. Is this your first time out to bat as a real estate investor?
Yeah.
Okay.
My mom actually has been an avid. She's got a couple duplexes. She's got two single-family homes, and she's actually – the reason I got my real estate license was for to sell her properties purely
okay.
so she could do good 1031 exchange.
Cool.
I've had my real estate license for 2 years, but it's not my full-time job. So.
All right. Well, one of the things that's going to happen, if you start advertising for buyers, you start putting signs out for buyers, rent to buy,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get, like I said earlier on the call, I don't know if you're on or not, but earlier on the call I said 10% of those people that call in on average are going to actually qualify, and they just don't think they do.
Right.
Maybe they had a bankruptcy 2.5 years ago. They didn't realize that after 2 years you can get a mortgage.
Right.
So you can get them qualified. You can go find them a house, and you can get a commission.
Right.
Also, with all the sellers that you're talking to, all those sellers want to sell. Not all of them want to sell to you as under the terms that you want to make an investment, but all of them want to sell. That means they need a real estate agent. So you
right.
can work for them as a real estate agent too. And once you've established yourself as credible as an investor, it's a lot easier to make that jump and just list the property for them.
Right.
So there's as you get better at this, you'll get good at talking to these people and you'll get their listings.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's been fun and an interesting process to go through. I'm lucky that I had my mom to kind of practice with and just understanding what she wanted to do and how where she wanted to go with her next property.
Well, listen to what she has to say. If she's got that many properties, she's got some experience behind her. And, she knows specific, is she working in the same area you are?
I mean, she actually owns her own tax company, so most of my clients come from her because they all need houses, and she'll tell them if they qualify or not, or they make, so.
What a great source of buyers. That's a great source of lease option buyers.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to get those guys on your list.
Yeah, that's actually kind of how she kind of got me to kind of go to that next step, so.
Yeah. And then use the for rent technique to get once you have these buyers, you can go to these for rent guys and say, hey, I got 23 people in this area that are looking for a house. I don't have any more. Do you have any? Would you be willing to rent to own your property? And you'll find some that will. Even in hot markets, they will.
Okay.
One of the things that happens in a hot market like a Phoenix or a rapidly appreciating market is the lease option guys, they don't want to put a price on it because they don't know where it's going yet. So what you can do is you can set it up as an appraisal, that's acceptable to both parties, or you can set a price that's that'll be higher in the future, and just make a wild guess at it, whatever the seller will accept. If you can find a buyer that'll accept it, they may or may not buy it anyway. And if it doesn't go up, they wouldn't have to buy it, so it could still make sense for them.
Okay.
All right. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Who else has a question for me?
Hey, Joe, what was their website again? Did you say LoopNet?
Yeah, LoopNet.com.
L-U-P-E?
L-O-O-P. N-E-T.
L-O-O-P.
N-E-T.com. Okay. And it's just that's just commercial real estate on there.
Okay.
And I'm not saying buy those properties that are on there, but that's a great way to find out what's available on the market. You know, and also for somebody to jump into a property, and there's cheap properties on there too, but, you know, to jump into a $3 or $4 million, $5 million property and not really know what you're doing, you know, even though let's say you've got $400,000 or $500,000, $600,000 you want to invest, and you know how to structure the deal, and you know how to buy the property, and it looks like it cash flows, and that's all the money you've got in the world, and you go out and buy this property and you get a loan on it. You can make money on that, but it's probably not the right choice for a beginner investor. You need to take some knocks and learn what the problems are going to be first, so you know what to expect when you get into it. Who else has questions?
Joe, this is Tom in North Carolina again.
Hey, Tom.
I don't have actually a question, but I do have a little comment here that some of those may be interested in. I have a real estate agent here in Winston-Salem. She's a REMAX agent. I'm just on her mailing list where she sends me listings every day of homes for sale. But you can go on her, on their website there. That she sends me, all I have to do is click on it, and I can actually get the comps for any house she has right off of their website. And it's just absolutely free of charge.
That's cool.
I assume probably any REMAX agent can do the same thing.
It's probably not REMAX. It's probably the Board of Realtors that has that. So,
well,
so any place that any town that has that software would probably be able to do that. And so ask your agent and see if they can do that for you.
Uh-huh.
Are you finding any good deals?
I see some.
I mean, just the fact that you have access to comps would be good.
Right, well, that was my point.
Yeah.
You don't really have to go out and pay for the comps.
Right.
If you just get on a realtor's list that sends you out a list every day, you can pull up your own comps, and they're all updated daily. So, pretty good deal.
Yeah, that's good. Now, let me say something as well as far as comps go. If you're doing this stuff the way I'm teaching it, you don't really need comps. I know that's a radical idea, but with these methods of buying with zero down, with not putting any credit on the line, you know, without spending your money. And that excludes the stuff I was just talking to Stephanie about. But the main core stuff that I teach, if you don't have comps, it's not going to be a problem. Because what's going to happen is if you buy a property and you're paying too much for it, and you can't find a buyer for it, and you just never close it, so you've lost nothing. And you can spend all this time checking comps, going to the title company, doing inspections. You know, this is the way most people go out and buy rental property, or they go out and buy, you know, rehabs or whatever. This is how most guys teach this stuff. They say, go out, find a property that's vacant, then go to the downtown and find out who owns it, and find out how the title looks, and find out what kind of mortgages are on it, and then, you know, talk to the seller, see if they're interested in selling it, you know, do an inspection on the property, do title work, do all this stuff. And most of the stuff they do before they even make an offer. And then they make an offer, and, you know, we don't even know that the guy wants to sell it yet. So instead, do it the way I'm teaching. Have them call you, say, hey, I want to sell my property, and you'll tell them, well, I can make an offer like this, or like this. Which one sounds good to you? And then they can make a decision if one of those works for them or not. But you can make an offer immediately over the phone right then and there based on what they told you and not have any risk at all. You don't have to know any of that information. So Don't get caught up in having to know all that stuff and doing all that legwork and spending 3 hours before you can even make an offer. Instead, go out, and if you don't have anybody calling you on your ads or on your other advertising, then just get on the phone to FSBOs and start making offers to every. If you made if you called every FSBO in your paper today and made them an offer, like I teach, one of those types of offers, one of those guys is going to accept one of those offers. I guarantee it. There's 100 people in your paper probably that are for sale by owner in any metropolitan area. You can call them all. One of those is going to accept your deal. And my guess is a whole lot more than that is. And when you get good at it, it's going to be a lot even more than that. And when you get really good at it, you will never have to call them because they'll be calling you because you're going to set it up properly to get them to call you. So this is not a difficult process. It does take some skill, though, in talking to people and understanding what you're selling, because what you're doing is selling something here. You're solving a problem, and you're selling an idea. You've got to understand your idea. And the only way you're going to really understand how to explain your idea is by having people ask you questions, because then you'll find out what you don't know. And then when you get off the phone, say, or maybe you explain something and you get off the phone and say, well, you know, I could have explained that to them a little differently. I could have said this instead. Because they're not saying no because they don't want to do it. They're saying no because you didn't show them why it made sense for them. You weren't good enough. That's the reason they're saying no. And so you have to look at how am I gonna make this work. Now, I always talk about motivated sellers. I think everybody does. But Ozum, the guy that I've worked with for years and years, smart guy, he got in front of my group last event. He says, stop thinking about motivated sellers. It's not about motivated sellers. It's just about sellers. You can make money on everybody. And it's true. You can either put a deal together, you can help them find a realtor, you can help them find a mortgage broker. Everybody needs your help, and you can solve their problem. And you want to be able to do that for everybody, and you'll make money. And every person you talk to that has a house for sale, you can always make an offer. You should always make an offer, even if you don't think they're going to accept it. Say, look, you know, I know you probably, this isn't going to work for you. You know, based on what you're telling me here, this deal doesn't sound like it really works, but let me just throw out to you, you know, a couple of things that I can do to make this work if you're interested. And then, you know, if you are, great, we'll do it. If you're not, no problem. You know, maybe a month from now you will be interested, and if I can still do it, I'll do it at that time. So you can make these offers, and then you can put them in a follow-up system. And what I like to use is an autoresponder, which is an email thing that sends out a series of emails so that every 3 weeks or every month they're getting another email from you. And all that email says is, hey, this is Joe. You know, I talked to you about a month ago about the sale of your house, and you're trying to get it sold. And I'm not sure if you got it sold yet, but if you're still interested in selling it, and if you consider, you know, doing it the way I talked about, the type of offer that I made, I'd still be interested in buying it from you. But give me a call if you're interested. And that goes out once a month, because these people may not be ready this month or this week, but maybe in 3 weeks or 6 weeks or 2 months or 8 months or a year, they've changed their mind and they're willing and they're ready to go, and their motivation level has ratcheted up to the point where they have to do it.
Right. And
now it makes sense.
I'm just starting to tell all the people I call unless you sell your house, you'll be hearing from me every week to 10 days. Send it to me or somebody else.
Right. That's great. I don't know. It depends on how aggressive you want to get. I guess the more aggressive you get, the probably the more people will do it. But what's going to happen is you want to get it set up in an autoresponder so you can put their name in this autoresponder and it automatically starts sending them stuff. And you never have to think about them again. And suddenly you'll get a call from somebody out of the blue, and they'll say, "Hey, you know, I got your email, and I am ready." And you'll say, "Who are you?" Because you didn't send them an email; your autoresponder did.
Right.
Because you don't even remember them, you know, and you'll have to get all start all over again. But that's okay, because they're ready to go at that time. And that's a beautiful thing when you start getting business like that. And that'll happen if you start putting these people into the system. So always get their email and always follow up with them. And if you don't have an autoresponder, what you can do is you can put them all in a big database list and send out a mass mail to everybody just once a month. Same email to everybody once a month. I like a, you know, I use a program called Group Mail, which is just like $100. You can get it at infacta.com, infacta.com. I think there's even a free version. I'm not sure how much it sends out. But it's like $100, and you can send it out, and it'll personalize it. So you can put in dear first name, or dear John, or dear Frank, or dear Mary. You know, I saw your we talked about your property at 6932, you know, West Main Street, and it'll plug in the specifics about their property as long as you put it in your database. And then it's a really cool way because it personalizes it and makes it more likely that they'll get back with you.
Okay.
Oh, also, Tom, since you're in North Carolina, there's some interesting things happening there with pre-construction, too.
How's that?
There's some interesting things happening there with pre-construction. With
yeah, matter of fact, I have about five new subdivisions within 2 miles of me.
You ought to look at what are those appreciating right now within those subdivisions?
I'm not really sure. I have a nephew who is a real estate agent, and he's looking into that for me. Actually, I have a neighbor who just bought a house in a new one last month. He's moving into it today, as a matter of fact. And the only thing gets me around here is the new houses. I'm talking average 1,800 square feet are selling cheaper than the existing houses around here, same size, at 20 years old. And that's kind of got me stumped.
What are they saying about that? Why is that happening?
The only thing I can figure is the real estate agents are bumping them up. I don't understand it myself.
Have you looked at both types of properties?
Yeah, I looked at a property actually about, it was last year before the new tax assessment. It was actually my sister-in-law owned it. It was appraised at $80,000. All of a sudden, the new tax assessment comes out, and the tax assessment is on it for $117,000. And she went into foreclosure with it, and now the bank's wanting $139,000.
Wow.
And that's a pretty big jump in 1 year. And I don't see where the value went up because the house has been sitting vacant the whole time.
The value goes up based on the market. So you need to, your indicators are going to be your market. So you need to look at what those values are. Now, what may be happening is your new construction may be under value. So that means they may go up in value and might be you might be able to make money off of that.
Well, I have an investor up in Rhode Island who's wanting to move down here, and I just sent off an email to him earlier today giving him a couple options on some new houses that I do know about, and I'm waiting on him to get back to me because he'll be putting the money up for him. He's wanting to buy some, but
well, you should be able to get some to get I'm going to suggest that you use the techniques that I'm teaching to get you started here. You know, where you're advertising, getting people to call you, call the landlords, call the for sale by owners, put the ads in the paper for the we buy homes, put the signs out that we buy homes, put the rent to buy signs out, get that animal going, do the voicemail blasts to people, landlords, to expired listings. You know, expireds is a great list, too, if you've got an agent that you can work with. It'll give you expireds. Sending out emails and snail mail and voicemail to those people is very powerful and works all the time. The snail mail that I sent out that Steve Barcell, who's from Raleigh, actually, from North Carolina, we've been getting, on average, between 8 and 10% response anywhere we send that out to expireds. You know, people that would respond to it. And out of those 10, there's no reason, you know, even a beginner couldn't put together one deal out of those 10. And if you're not a beginner, you're going to be able to put together more than that.
Is that Steve over there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Steve Barcell.
All right.
You know Steve?
No, I don't know him. I listened to him several times on the stupid CDs.
Okay.
What he was saying and how he was doing it.
Right. All right. Well, good. There's lots of possibilities there. North Carolina is a great place to be working right now.
Yeah. It's appreciating. I've heard anywhere from 3% to 12%. So, depends on who you talk to, I guess.
Per what? Per year? Per month? Per what?
Per year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are places that's growing more than that. All righty. Who else has a question for me? I got a couple more minutes if anybody's got a question. Or a comment, or about what you're doing, what you're working on, what you're failing on, what you're succeeding on. Who's done a deal recently that hasn't spoken up already that has put a deal together and made some money that hasn't already told us they made money? Anybody on the call that's made some money in the last 6 months or so? That's willing to talk up? All right. But it sounds like we've got a lot of people that are just beginning here. And I think what you need to do, you need to get this first deal under your belt. And it's really not as difficult as you think it is. And there's not as much risk as you think it is. And it's not as frightening as you think it is. The fear that you've got is in your mind. And you've got to just get past that. You've got to get on the phone and start talking to these people and putting these deals together. You know, I've had people that just absolutely get sick. I mean, I talked to a guy that he said he actually threw up before, you know, he started making calls. It was so tense about it. But he did it anyway. He got on the phone, and he put together a deal that same day, by the way. So if you get on the phone and you do that stuff, and another thing that I see, another problem that I see people have, especially really smart people, you know, the guys, the computer nerds and the engineers of the bunch, you know, they analyze this stuff so much. They're so worried about making a mistake, and they have to know everything before they can get started. Well, you're not going to know everything before you get started. You just got to take a step out, because you can only learn it by doing it. This is not something that you can learn in a book. You can learn the technique, you can learn the concepts, you can learn the process, you can learn so much of it you can learn, but the best way to learn is by doing it. And once you have a grounding on how to do it, you need to take a step out and start doing it, and then you can come back to me and say, hey, Joe, this is what I tried, this is what worked, this is what didn't work, you know, this is where I'm getting stuck, this is the success that I'm having. You know, and then I can help you, and I can say, well, let's go in this direction instead, or let's try this instead. And then this is what I do with my mentor students, and what I do at my events, and what I can do on these kind of calls for you guys as well. And in my newsletter, if you send me faxes with questions or emails with questions, I'll address those things in my newsletter as well. All right, anybody have anything else before we wrap it up?
Well, I can, this is Tom again, North Carolina. I can agree with you on that, you know, that making the calls gets easier, too, as you go. I started out making one or two a day, and now I make anywhere from 10 to 15 a day. And I haven't made a deal yet, but I'm working on it, and I will make one.
What do you think the biggest problem is for you to putting together a deal?
That part, I haven't pinpointed yet.
You haven't what?
I haven't pinpointed the problem yet.
Okay.
I use the profile sheets, everything, but...
Are you making an offer to every one of these people?
I'm attempting to.
Well, what are you saying to them when you make an offer? I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm putting you on the spot, Tom. Sorry about that, but...
Well, that's all right. First of all, I try to find out what their problem is, and... I try to come up with a solution, anything that'll, you know, benefit them. And it's just the offers I have made so far have just been rejected.
Okay. And did the offers make sense?
You know, eventually I'm going to get one accepted, and one's going to go to two, and two's going to go to four, four's going to go to eight, so on.
Absolutely. And the
practice work.
Every time you make a call, you need to sit down and you need to write out the offer that you made. I'd like you to do this. Make the offer. If you need to get off the phone and analyze the offer first, do that, and then call them back. That might be an easy way. Say, well, let me just get the information. They say, you know, let me call you back later today or in a little while because I want to do some numbers. And then I'll call you back, and I'll make you an offer.
Hey, Joe.
Do it that way.
Joe.
Who's that? Hello?
Yeah, Joe.
Yeah.
This is Steve Marcel.
Hey, Steve. How's it going?
Okay. I heard Tom mention he's in North Carolina, and if he'd like my help, I'd be glad to help him.
Okay.
I can sure use it, Steve. I'm over in Winston-Salem.
Tom, send me an email. And
I can help you analyze the deals and make offers and stuff.
Tom, so send me an email, okay. Tom, and I'll get it to, I'll forward it on to Steve, okay?
What was that again?
Tom, send me an email. I'll forward it to Steve.
Okay.
Okay.
Should I give him my phone number, Joe, or what?
No, I'll send you the email. That way we won't have to broadcast it, okay?
Okay.
A lot of people are going to hear this.
Okay.
So,
Steve.
What's that?
No problem. It sounds like you're doing something. I don't mind helping somebody who's doing something. I hate trying to help somebody who won't do nothing.
I'm trying.
That's all that counts, man. We'll put it together.
Yeah, if you're talking to those people, you need to be making the offers. And I would get off the phone. I'd design an offer, and then get back on the phone, make the offer to these people, and, you know, make sure that it's an offer that's acceptable. I mean, make it an offer that will make sense for them. And make sure that you're talking to the right people, too. If you're just talking to for sale by owners, it may not work. You're going to be beating your head against the wall a lot. That it's not a bad place to call. You can put deals together, but it's a place to beat your head against the wall a lot, too. You might want to be talking to landlords instead. Who are you mainly talking to, Tom?
For sale by owners.
Okay. Switch over to landlords.
Well, that's what I'm working on now.
Okay.
I gotta go, Joe, so just tell him to send it to me, okay?
All right. Steve, are you coming on September?
I don't think so, man.
Okay.
But I might have my partner coming, so I'll let you know.
Okay.
You're supposed to let me know today.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
So Tom, is that... Move
yeah.
in that direction with that. Move in that direction. Get away from the FSBOs and do the landlords. It'll be a little bit easier for you to get going with that. And use the lease option memo process that we teach you.
All
that.
Right.
Okay?
Well, I appreciate you talking to you, Joe.
You bet.
And I'll send you an email shortly.
Okay. Okay.
Now, any help I can get, I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Does anybody else have any final words or questions or comments before we wrap it up?
Yeah, Joe?
Yeah.
Carl Anderson?
Hey, Carl.
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I have a friend who just called me the other day. I have not done any deals. He just called me the other day. He's going to Puerto Rico, and he has a friend here in the States that has $1 million-plus home down there that he wants to sell. And he wanted to know if I'd be interested. I said, well, yeah. What can you tell me about it? He said, nothing. But he's there. He's going to try and get some information about, I guess, the size of the house, how much they want, et cetera. You have any other ideas of questions I should ask him? Or?
And this property is in Puerto Rico?
He's there.
The property is in Puerto Rico?
Yes.
Okay.
It's in the mountains.
Well, if it's $1 million property, it's just a matter. You can do it the same way everything else works, you know. But you need to find out. You need to find out some basics. What's the value? What's the mortgage on it? What's the situation of the seller involved? You know,
okay.
use the seller profile that I've got in the book to go through that process with them. Get all the information, and then you'll be able to analyze the deal and decide what kind of deal makes sense. It doesn't get out of your head that it matters that it's someplace different or that it's a high price.
Okay.
Those things do not matter. What matters is, does the deal work or do the numbers work? Now, is he close to the house? Does he live close to the house?
Well, no, he's from my friend is from here in Orlando.
Okay.
And he was going home to visit family for the next couple of weeks.
He's got family there that could help, though.
He's got family that probably, could probably give him some clues on what the market's doing.
Well, what I'm thinking is they could help him by putting up signs and showing the property.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean.
Say one, if you got this property tied up, you just as a landlord deal, you know, look, we'll sell you, we'll find you a lease option buyer for it, and then you'd go around, turn around, find somebody with $10,000 lease option fee. You get the lease option fee, they get to buy the property for $1 million in a year, and in the meantime, they'll pay X amount of dollars per month for the rent. That might be one way to set it up.
Yeah. Would it seem more likely to find a buyer here on the mainland than Puerto Rico? Or
I think it's possible, but I don't think it's only that.
Okay.
I mean, I would focus on, I would do the basics. I'd get a sign in the yard. I'd put an ad in the paper in Puerto Rico. Wouldn't hurt to hit South Florida too. You know, if it's a vacation or resort type of property, then it might make sense to hit the coast there and get everybody along the coast there and get the advertising along going there.
Okay.
Because that absolutely could.
I don't
work. Know
anything about that, so.
Right. You got some research to do.
Yeah.
And once you know that, you'll have a better idea of how to analyze the deal and how to make the offer.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. All right. I'm giving anybody else a last chance. Want to make sure everybody gets their questions answered. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you coming on the call. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Jeff.
And just so you know, if for those of you who are coming to the boot camp, it's going to be on the 16th, 17th, and 18th. That's Friday, Saturday, Sunday of September. And you're welcome to come if you haven't signed up and would like to come. That boot camp is also is part of the mentor program. So it's the boot camp, the mentor program, and all these other buying events that we do that Steve and Bob and these other guys are all involved in. And you're welcome to get involved with that if you'd like. Love to have you. Just give me a call. You can actually find out more information about it by going to zerodowninvesting.com, zerodowninvesting.com. And I've been sending out emails on the boot camp too, so you probably there's some other information out there on it as well. So if you have questions about it, feel free to give me a call. All right, thanks, guys. Talk to you next time.